Sweden. Okay, so Sweden, land of, you know, those progressive social policies, right? Always ranking high in those gender equality reports. But did you know, like, the hashtag MeToo movement, it kind of played out differently over there, revealed some, well, complexities, you could say, that I don't think a lot of people expected. And that's what we're gonna, you know, dive into today. This is gonna be interesting.
Yeah, it really is fascinating, isn't it? You'd think, you know, on the surface, a country that's like so seemingly advanced when it comes to gender equality, they'd have this smoother path, you know, post hashtag Me Too. But what's really interesting here, what we're really looking at, it isn't just like the accusations themselves, you know, it's how the Swedish media, how they chose to present them, because that's like a reflection, right? A mirror to their culture showing us
Yeah.
these norms and unfortunately these biases that are still kind of lingering.
Totally. And we've got two academic papers kind of guiding us on this deep dive. One of them really breaks down, like dissects the Swedish news coverage of these really high profile hashtag MeToo cases. And the other one, it analyzes how media framing, you know, it's subtle, but it really shapes how the public perceives these events. It's the language they use, the emphasis, even like the tiny details. It's kind of wild when you start to see the pattern.
Exactly. It's not just what is being said, but the how. That's what often gets overlooked. And that's what really shapes our understanding.
We're going to focus on three specific cases today, all involving these like powerful men, right? They're all in media and culture, which is interesting in itself. And they were facing these accusations from multiple women. The one that really kind of got me, though, was this one with the prominent journalist, I think he was, because he had actually been accused of assault like way back in 1997.
Yeah, and even with those early accusations, he still managed to maintain this position of power. That detail right there, it's extra interesting because of how Sweden sees itself, right,
Right.
as a leader in gender equality. So these cases, they like directly challenge that whole narrative.
Yeah.
And it gets even more complex because the legal outcomes for each of these cases, they're all over the place. One conviction, one acquittal, and then one, they had to throw it out because of the statute of limitations.
It's like Sweden is this like experiment, you know, like how does a progressive society, even one like theirs, still grapple with these issues? One thing I kept noticing in the articles, and it really surprised me, was how often the news would use this super legalistic language. Almost like, you know, the women had this extra burden of proof that, like, they shouldn't have to. You know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really astute observation.
Right.
And yeah, it highlights those like power dynamics, right? How they can operate in these really subtle ways that we don't always see right away. See, by framing the accusations through this legal lens from the get-go, it's almost like it implies that the women's stories, they need this like extra layer of validation, like they shouldn't be readily believed, which is kind of messed up when you think about
It's
it.
like they couldn't just be believed at face value.
Right. And this whole legalistic framing, it unintentionally gives the accused man this platform to use all those like familiar legal defense tactics,
Yeah.
denying everything outright or downplaying their actions as inappropriate, but not actually criminal.
So it's like an uneven playing field from the very beginning.
Exactly. And that's where all those seemingly small details, like the specific words that are chosen, they become so incredibly important. Like, for instance, you see how Fox News, they tend to use a lot more negative language, very divisive language surrounding hashtag MeToo. But then you have CNN who, you know, they're trying to be more neutral, but even they reveal these implicit biases in their word choices. Like, for example, how often they use the word survivor instead of victim. On the surface, it might seem like a tiny difference.
But those words, man, they carry such different weight to them. They hit differently.
Exactly. You say survivor, it implies this strength, you know, this resilience. But with victim, it can kind of give this sense of helplessness. And guess what? The study looking at Swedish media, they found similar patterns emerging there too. It's like this universal thing, the way certain words just kind of tap into our preconceived notions about gender roles and even justice without us even realizing it.
Wild. So what, like, specifically did they find? How are women being portrayed in the Swedish media?
Well, they were often painted as these incredibly brave heroines for, you know, daring to speak out.
Or their actions were questioned, like their motives for speaking out were
I
suspicious.
get it. It's like this weird contradiction, right?
Yeah.
There's this desire to like support these women, but at the same time, there's this deeply ingrained belief in upholding the legal process above all else. And those two things, they
Yeah.
don't always play nice together.
Yeah. It's a really interesting question, isn't it? Like, is this something unique to Sweden, or are we looking at something, you know, kind of universal here? I'm not sure it's a simple answer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there are these cultural differences for sure, but this tension. between supporting survivors and then like scrutinizing everything they do. I don't know. That feels pretty universal to me.
It's like this impossible tightrope they're being forced to walk, right? Like, if you speak up, you're brave, but also, why didn't you prevent this? Why didn't you come forward sooner? Exactly. And it always circles back to those same questions. Like,
right.
Well, why didn't they report it earlier? Or what were their motivations? Or even like scrutinizing their choices leading up to the alleged event.
Which just plays right back into that, you know, that deep-seated belief that women are somehow responsible for the actions of like someone else, even in a society that's like actively trying to be egalitarian.
Oh,
it's really disheartening when you think about it.
It really is. And on the flip side, what we see is the accused men. They're often given way more leeway to kind of control their narrative, you know, and share their side of the story.
So how did that actually play out, like in the media coverage? How were they presenting the men's side versus the women's side?
Well, it was interesting. The men, they would often draw this really deliberate line, right, between what's actually legally wrong and then what they considered, you know, bad or inappropriate behavior, but not like actually illegal.
So minimizing their actions.
Basically. Acknowledging maybe they did something wrong, but at the same time trying to make it seem like, you know, not really a big deal. And of course, this plays right into that dominant legal narrative that we talked about before.
Right? Yeah.
And it just makes everything so much murkier.
Yeah. And as we've been saying, that legal lens, while important, it can sometimes like work against actual justice, because then it becomes about proving or disproving these very specific legal things instead of like stepping back and looking at the bigger picture, the societal and cultural stuff that's really at the root of all this.
Exactly. And it allows the accused to hide behind those like classic legal defense tactics, you know.
Denials.
Misunderstandings. Downplaying the severity of their actions. It's a tale as old as time.
Right. It's like, okay, even with a legal system that, you know, ostensibly works, the media's portrayal of these events can still perpetuate those imbalances and those biases that are already so deeply ingrained. It really makes you realize how important it is to, like, pay attention to the language being used and how it colors our perception of these already really complex situations.
Without a doubt. This whole Swedish study, it's not just about Sweden, right? It's like this perfect example of how the media, even in a country that's really trying to be at the forefront of gender equality, even they can fall into these traps, have these blind spots. And it makes you wonder, like, how much more pronounced are these biases in countries that aren't even putting in that same effort, you know?
Oh, man, that's a chilling thought.
It really is. It just highlights how important it is for media outlets, like, everywhere to be aware of their own role in this.
Yeah.
Because they're not just shaping the narrative, they're shaping public perception. Journalists, editors, producers, they all need to be aware of these ingrained biases and how the language they use, even if they don't mean to, can actually reinforce some really harmful stereotypes.
So where do we go from here? How do we start to break these patterns, these cycles? How do we make media coverage of these really sensitive issues, you know, more equitable and insightful?
It really starts with just acknowledging the problem exists in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like journalists and editors, they need to be educated about these linguistic patterns and like the impact they can have. They need to make sure they're getting information from a variety of sources, making sure that they're amplifying diverse voices, not just the loudest ones.
Yeah. It's about going way beyond just reporting the facts, right? It's about really understanding the impact those words have and the potential consequences of the way we choose to tell these stories.
Yes. And it's about moving past that like strict legal framework, looking beyond the accusations themselves and trying to understand the larger forces at play, the societal stuff, the cultural stuff, because that's what's really at the heart of this.
That's a tall order.
It is, but it's crucial because, I mean, ideally, we should be trying to create these media narratives that aren't just accurate, but fair and equitable. Narratives that actually promote understanding and accountability instead of just reinforcing the same harmful power dynamics and stereotypes that got us here in the first place.
So if even Sweden, right, with their reputation and all, if they struggle with this stuff in their media, is it even possible to have like truly balanced, unbiased reporting on these issues anywhere?
That's the question, isn't it? The big one. And I think it gets at something really fundamental about the media. You know, it's not this thing that exists in isolation. It's a product of the society it comes from. Mm-hmm. So it's going to inherit all those complexities and, yeah, contradictions too.
So even if, like, a journalist is trying their best to be objective, they're still, like you said, a product of their culture. And that comes with baggage, right? Those inherent biases.
Yeah, pretty much. And those biases, they're often unconscious. So it's not like people are doing it on purpose, but they can still seep into how they present the news. But here's the thing. Knowing that doesn't mean we just give up. It's actually a call to action, right? It means we have to be extra vigilant, examining our own assumptions, the language we use, the stories we keep telling over and over again.
So it's less about reaching this perfect objectivity, which maybe isn't even possible, and more about like just constantly trying, always self-reflecting.
Yeah, exactly. It's ongoing, you know, a journey, not this destination you arrive at. And it needs us to like question everything. Actively look for different voices, perspectives that we're not used to, and be open to feedback, even when it's hard to hear, you know?
It's progress over perfection, like they say. But okay, beyond those kind of like big picture ideas, are there any specific things that can help to get us closer to more balanced coverage of these sensitive topics?
Well, for sure. A lot of it goes back to what we were talking about before. Diversifying newsrooms is huge. When the people deciding what stories get told, how they're told, when those people come from a wider range of backgrounds, experiences, we're just naturally going to get more of that variety in the reporting, you know?
Makes sense. If it's always the same type of person making those calls, the same blind spots are going to keep popping up.
Exactly. And beyond just who's in the newsroom, giving journalists the actual training they need to spot their own biases is really important, too.
Like actual guidance on things like using gender-neutral language, mm-hmm. avoiding those harmful stereotypes we talked about, making sure they're getting info from diverse sources.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just the individual people. Media organizations, they need to build a culture of accountability, being open to being called out, admitting when they messed up, and being committed to always doing better, you know?
Creating systems where good reporting is actually rewarded and supported.
Exactly. And a big part of that is recognizing that objectivity doesn't always mean giving equal time to every single side.
Uh-huh.
Especially when some of those sides are based on, like, straight up harmful stereotypes or misinformation.
Right. It's not about false equivalence. Truth and accuracy have to come first, even if it means challenging those really dominant narratives that people are used to.
Absolutely. And that takes a commitment to fact checking, relying on experts who actually know what they're talking about. And yeah, sometimes being willing to go up against powerful people or institutions, even when it's risky.
Sounds like a tall order, but it is possible then to get better coverage.
It is. But it takes all of us working on it, right? Not just the people in media, but us, the audience too.
So we're not off the hook either.
Definitely not. We have to be critical consumers of the information we're getting, questioning the stories we're being told, looking for those different viewpoints, because they're out there.
Can't just passively take it all in then. We've got to actively engage with it, be critical thinkers about it all, seek out different perspectives to get the full picture.
Exactly. And we all have voices. So we can use them to hold these outlets accountable. If you see something messed up, biased coverage, call it out. Contact them telling you want better. And you can put your money where your mouth is too, supporting the organizations that are actually trying to do good ethical reporting.
It's two-way then. Media has to step up, but we've got to demand better and actually be part of the solution too, right?
It's a conversation,
yeah.
You know, a back and forth. And it never really ends. But by working together, challenging each other, being open to change, we can get closer to a media landscape that actually reflects how complex the world really is.
This has been, wow, eye-opening, this whole dive into the hashtag MeToo stuff in Sweden. Really shows you how powerful the media is in shaping how we see these complex issues, and how even in places that are trying to be progressive, that deep-down bias is still there. But it sounds like there is hope. There are things we can do, both those in media and us just reading and listening, to make things more fair, more equitable, and actually representative.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's a journey, that's for sure. But by reflecting, having these conversations, and taking action, we all contribute to a society that's more informed and ultimately more empowered.
Love that. It's so important to remember that. And on that note of hope and collective action, we're going to wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us on this journey, everyone, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive into a new and fascinating topic.